Welcome to the Onyx Pathcast. My name is Matthew Dawkins, and I am accompanied by my co-hosts, Eddie Webb.
Hello.
And Dixie Cochran.
Hello there.
Hello.
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 Hello. We're here for an exciting interview today. We will be consigning Eddie to the Cupboard of Shame.
The shame cupboard. We should have put that as a monster and then came from beyond the grave.
Yeah, of which we will be talking about on next week's Pathcast, because time Ooh. Is topsy-turvy and wibbly-wobbly and all that. But in today's episode, as you will have probably gathered from the title, we are interviewing Outstar of, well-known as being the World of Darkness community developer. I get that wrong during the course of the interview, so look forward to that. I am sure that you will find this interview lovely and interesting, and it may open your eyes to some of the new projects that are coming down the pipe from Paradox Interactive and other companies, where as far as the World of Darkness goes.
Also, you're just going to get a lot of insight into us as people.
Yeah, tormented childhoods mostly, and wishes to hitchhike across Asia.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to spoil everything, so we're not going to do a long intro on this episode because the interview is going to pretty much fill up the time. So with that said, I think we'll cast straight over to it now. Welcome back. We are here, myself and Dixie, that is, with our guest, Martina Zich.
That was pretty good. I am very proud of you.
Oh, thank you very much. I do try to pronounce our guests' names correctly. We're very pleased to have you here, Martina, because an Outstar, I should say, because I think most of the people listening probably know you by that name.
I still have to get used to it a little bit, because honestly, not a lot of people call me by my real name. Even my parents just find some nicknames for me usually. And now suddenly at work, everyone tries to call me Martina, which is a very weird experience. I'm trying to get used to my name again.
All right. Well, that's actually a good opening question. Where did the name Outstar come from?
I wish that was a more interesting story, but it just came from the fact that I really wanted to very quickly set up a Gmail account back in the days when I was setting up my very first Gmail account. And everything was taken. Every single login was just already booked. And I had Homestar Runner open on another tab. So I typed in Homestar Runner, which was obviously taken. And then I typed in Outstar Walker, and that actually went in. So
I love that it's a Homestar reference. I love that so much. Like, Eddie's going to be sad he wasn't here to hear about that. Because I never would have put that together. Like, you know, I thought that Outstar was like a cool like sci-fi thing, and then for a while I was like, maybe it's like a Starwalker reference, you know, like a Skywalker, Starwalker, Star Wars association. And I love that it's Homestar Runner this whole time.
It's funny because apparently like 5 or 6 years into me having this nickname, it was actually taken. The Outstar and Instar are now some terms in neurological science when it comes to the functions of the brain. I'm not really sure what they mean. I've never researched that. But yeah, right now my nickname is featured in a lot of the scientific articles out there. So hooray.
So you may well be a neurological phenomenon.
Probably, yes. I tend to convince myself that I was one of the reasons why this scientific occurrence happens. But I think, unfortunately, I'm not really related to that. But still, on the better note, it's collected with Homestar and not Strong Bad, which would be my favorite character from Homestar Runner. But I'm trying to pretend that I'm a little bit better of a person.
I guess if you had taken Strong Bad and flipped it, you would have been, what, like Weak Good? Like, it would have ended up being your name.
I mean, that does sound good. Maybe I will rebrand one day into Weak Good.
I think Outstar's a little bit better, personally.
I'll stick to that then.
So obviously a lot of fans are going to address you in that way. And would you say most of your fan base, most of the community that have, if I dare say so, they've received you pretty damn warmly. Would you say they have gravitated towards you because of your work with World of Darkness, or was it your prior work? Because I know you've worked for obviously more companies than Paradox, but how would you say you developed your following online?
I think it was a lot of different things that I've done in the past, and as much as nowadays I would say that majority of people that hang around on my streams and YouTube, they are World of Darkness fans, or I converted them into World of Darkness fans because I'm not doing anything else for a long time right now. I did start streaming back when I was still working for CD Projekt Red. And that was a short time I was working on The Witcher 3, and the news about me being a streamer spread around the office pretty quickly, which landed me a place in the GOGCOM stream team, of which I was a part for, I think, 4 years, and I was working for GOGCOM in that time. So I was streaming there. It's like a Twitch channel that still really does very well, and there's a lot of my friends streaming there, which was supposed to function like a live TV where people stream games that are being released on GOG daily. And I've been streaming there for a long, long time. And somehow in every second stream, I somehow tried to find some reference to Vampire the Masquerade or World of Darkness. And people made it to a meme. I was really crazy about that. And I think I was really bothering everyone with how borderline obsessed I was with Bloodlines, and that's one of the reasons why Bloodlines finally ended up being on GOG, because I was bothering them so much about making that happen. So I think a lot of my following comes back from these days when I was still streaming for GOG, and then I reached out to specify my content more around World of Darkness, which opened it to the community. So right now, I guess it's both of the worlds together, combined. But I feel like everyone who stood with me and who is still watching my content had to somehow convert themselves into World of Darkness fans, because else it would be unbearable.
Yeah, they may, if they're waiting right now for you to change your tune, they may be waiting for quite a while.
Yeah.
So.
They have to at least tolerate World of Darkness, if nothing else.
I mean, my first Bloodlines playthrough online, that was before I done the one on YouTube, which is still there. It was on Twitch, and I think it was like in 2015 or somewhere around that. And I even got Rick Schaefer to join me in the chat. And I remember I was just so nervous the whole day that he was supposed to join the chat and we were supposed to have this interview done, that I didn't eat anything because I was so over the moon about that. So it was a really cool first contact with this world, and that was for Rick. And then it just spread further, and I got to know so many amazing people, including you, Matthew, because I was watching you like crazy back then.
Yeah, well, we mentioned when you interviewed me on the World of Darkness channel, which is on Twitch and YouTube, that I wasn't even aware that you had been a fan of my channel. You know, I just saw you as some upstart. but now that I know you watch me, I think you're fantastic. Now, I didn't know you were a fan of my material, and so when I did find that out and that you'd watched all my videos and all that, I was touched and quite honoured, because I can see, well, quite frankly, how well you've done for yourself in not only the community, but also in terms of career. You are now the community manager for Paradox Interactive's World of Darkness team. I think it's that would be, in long form, your title, would it not?
It's like, to be exact, it's called community developer. There are some minor differences in between community manager and developer, which are, it will be too long to explain, but basically, yes, I am a community developer for World of Darkness brand team. And how that happened is a whole long of a story, but coming quickly back to your videos, Matthew, it's kind of funny because I did watch you a lot back in the days when I was still developing my YouTube and Twitch channel very, very early, before any World of Darkness videos I've made. And I always thought that I might not be the best suited for that role because I'm not a native English speaker. And you were always recording your goddamn videos with no cuts. And I was like, I can't do that. Like, Matthew is doing it this way, so obviously I have to do it this way as well. So I was trying my best to record my first clan video, my first explanation videos about bloodlines with no cuts. And I was like stumbling upon my words, just constantly trying to pronounce things correctly, but failed. And in the end, I was like, okay, maybe I just have to do a change of style and I won't be Matthew Dawkins. I will be a person who edits my videos a lot just because I can't speak English. And yeah, that's why my style of videos is like a little bit different because it's very like fastly edited because I just stumble a lot when it comes to English. I mean, I think it's getting better with time. And as you can probably hear now, I tend to speak a little bit better than I used to just a few years ago. People who watched my streams and videos, they know. But it's still a constant battle.
I am always so just flabbergasted when people who speak two or more languages get nervous about their command of English because most of us only speak one language. Like, let's just be real here. Like, most of us who speak English, whether American or English or what have you, a lot of us only speak one language. The American public school system is crap. So because of that, like, kudos to anybody who speaks more than one language. I took Japanese for 5 years, and I am not that great at it at this point because I didn't practice it for, you know, the past 16 years of my life.
Thank you. I mean, in Poland, it's actually weird because we tend to not really be in awe of people who speak two languages, like Polish and English. That's the absolute basic of what you should do. When it comes right. to the younger generation, because the older generation, they don't really speak various languages. But when it comes to us, and I just yesterday had a conversation in the family, and they were asking me, what languages do I speak? And I was like, I speak Polish and English. Also, only two. That was the little conversation. And I know that maybe my knowledge of English is a bit better than the general, you know, Polish person that you would talk to in English. But I did learn French. I learned Spanish. I learned Japanese. But because of lack of chances to practice it, there's just no way for me to keep up with it and remember everything.
Exactly.
Yeah, I will have to learn Swedish now, though, because my daughter is going to speak Swedish. So I need to know what she means when she tries to, you know, offend me or something.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Otherwise, she will be whispering it behind your back and you'll think it's a compliment.
Yes, exactly.
just to clarify for the listeners, so I've made a bit of a thing about this, not editing my videos, and I sometimes wave it as a bit of a arrogant thing, I guess. It's like a trademark. And it would probably be incorrect to say I don't edit my videos. It's just that I do multiple takes. I do take after take after take until I get it all right in one go. So while there are undoubtedly some, like the ones that were on the World of Darkness channel, are back on the World of Darkness channel, where I did some of those in one take and then just walked off, you know, packed up the camera and I was away. Most of the old ones where I was sat in front of a bookcase talking about clan videos, I could be there for hours just trying to get 15 minutes in a row where I didn't stumble over my words or say once.
See, so if you told me that 5 years ago, I would be in a much better place. And now, well, I learned
Matthew and I both grew up, if people are longtime listeners of this, we both grew up with various speech issues. Like mine was a stutter, which I still have. I'm sure people have noticed it if they listen a lot. I've been told it's not that noticeable, but I definitely do stutter. Sometimes when I fill in with an or an or a like, it's because if I don't do that, I'm going to stutter. And so I'd rather say than just sit here saying the same letter for 5 seconds. But yeah, so like when I do my voiceovers for Kickstarters and things like that, most of the ones that I've done have been one take when it comes down to it. And granted, it's only like 2 or 3 minutes, but it is the end of 15 takes of me going like, the lunar is all blah, like I can't talk anymore, like da 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 da, and then like I switch two words, or I say something wrong, or I speed up, or I drop something, and then I'm like, the lunar exalted, or this, fuck, and then I have to go back and start over. And yeah, so yeah, I think a lot of us that do anything that sounds like it came out very well in one take did not. I was live reading a chapter of Carmilla a while back for a project that Steffi Devon put together, and I definitely retook my video, I think, about 3 or 4 times because I would hit one page and just be like, I don't know what words I'm saying anymore.
Oh, yeah. We'll get back to you in a minute, Martin Martina. but I don't know if any of you saw Andy Serkis reading The Hobbit live during the lockdown.
That was amazing.
And I was listening to an interview with him after he had performed that in one sitting with, I think, like 3 bathroom breaks, I think was how he described it. And he said by the end of the book, he was just not recognizing parts of the book. He had read it in advance, about a week in advance, to refresh himself on the material. But after trying to go through it in the course of, I think it was like 14 hours or so,
mm-hmm.
he was getting to pages and he just lost track of the voices he was supposed to be putting on, the what was going on in the plot. He just couldn't remember any of it. And so he felt like he was losing his grip. By the end, he just felt utterly exhausted and ill. But it was worth it. I think it raised lots of money for a good cause, so... Yeah, admittedly, I've never done 14 hours worth of takes.
But well, that's your new challenge.
To do a vampire clan novel in one sitting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just pick one book and just read it all the way through in one sitting. How about Beckett's? So that one's short.
Yeah, I'll do different voices for every character in Beckett's Jihad Diary. Why not?
Yes. All right, sign me up for that. Absolutely.
No. No.
Robert,
no. No, we're not.
Everybody write into the podcast and demand that Matthew read Beckett's Jihad Diary in one sitting with different voices for every single character we encounter.
No, it has to be some kind of a charity drive or a bet. He has to lose a bet and then we make him do that because then it will be like he has to do it.
If lots of fans write into the Pathcast to ask me to do that, I will act appreciative and like this is going to be great fun. I will then secretly write to Thaune at Paradox and say, send us a cease and desist. We haven't asked for your permission to do a full audiobook of Beckett.
I am going to talk to Thaune before and I'm going to tell her not to do that.
Damn it.
Gotcha.
Somebody better be emailing Thaune like right now.
But going back very quickly to the whole anxiety thing, I'm not sure if it was the same for you guys, but YouTube and Twitch and in general recording yourself really helps with trying to get over the anxiety over your own voice. At least it was that for me. I don't think I hated anything about myself as much as I hated my voice. And that's mostly because I always wanted to sing, but I don't have the vocal cords for singing. But singing was something that I always wanted to do, and I just really sucked at it. So that was the first thing. And then my parents were always telling me that I need to focus on speaking a little bit better in Polish. Because my Polish is not very good, actually. I do tend to speak a little bit too fast, and Polish is very much of a kind of a language, right? So when you talk very fast, mm-hmm. you sound like white noise. And I did sound like white noise for majority of my life. So they wanted to send me to the speech impediment doctor when I was a teenager. And they did. And I went on the first session and I went through the doors. I still remember that. And I said, good morning in Polish. And the doctor just sighed, you know, with this like very exhausted tone, looked at me. Can you please repeat that? So I repeated, good morning. Oh my God, this is like few years therapy and you need to start from today, 2 times per week. We have to fix it somehow. You are a lost cause. And I was like, okay.
Wow. Oh my God.
Yes. And I went out of that room and I never came back again. I was like, I give up. I'm not going to speak properly ever in my life. And that's one of the major causes of my huge anxiety because of like my voice and the fact that I don't speak Polish very well. But I'm trying, and I feel like Twitch and YouTube really, really help with that.
It definitely does. I mean, I've told the story many times that I, as Dixie said, I had a speech impediment, I suppose, of a sort when I was younger, in that I spoke very slowly. And it was certainly the source of a lot of bullying and childhood anxiety. And even into the first couple of jobs I had, people I worked with would still mock me for my voice. So I was very conscious of it and wasn't at all a confident speaker, unless I was adopting a character. And I did that first in drama and later in role-playing, but I never really started working on my voice and growing confident enough to play around with it, speed up, focus on cadence and intonation and so on, until I started doing the YouTube videos at length, because it was the equivalent of rehearsing in front of a mirror over and over again. All those takes that I was doing, as much as it was sometimes excruciating to do it, allowed me to rehearse my own speech. And so I guess I probably said enough words, enough conjugations of verbs and the like to become confident in what I was saying and say it quickly, clearly, and with enough gravitas to actually make people listen and not be deterred. And I always felt like when I used to speak, people just didn't want to hear me. But now I feel like when I speak on YouTube or wherever, I can actually grab an audience's interest because I know exactly how to, I guess, state things. But yeah, oh, that was an interesting tangent.
Yeah.
It really is, though. Like, I mean, I got over a lot of my stutter from doing chorus and theater, because for some reason, even if you have a stutter, you tend to not stutter when you sing. So choir and chorus and vocal stuff was always very fun for me. But then doing theater was helpful because I memorized the lines ahead of time, and they had a cadence and they had a rhythm, and you had to follow that rhythm and that cadence. So it was hard to talk too fast when you were in a play, because they needed you to hit your cues more than they needed you to force a bunch of words out very quickly. So doing things like Shakespeare is what really, really kind of got me a little bit more comfortable with my own voice. And even then, I was a little self-conscious about my speaking voice for a while, but I've been doing this podcast for 2 years now, so I'm kind of used to hearing myself.
I was going to ask, and I suppose getting back to the subject, I hope the listeners are finding this interesting. It's a really deep personality dive into all three of us.
I find it interesting.
Yeah, I find it interesting, so sod them if they don't like it. So I wondered, was it Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines that got you into the world of darkness, or were you a tabletop role player before then? Or no. I guess you could have been a tabletop role player that wasn't playing vampire, but how was it that you got into the hobby?
I mean, when it comes to tabletop role playing, I need to remember the dates correctly, because my general experience with role playing began with Baldur's Gate and Neverwinter Nights, so video games based on D&D. And based on that, I think I somehow not acquired, but I think borrowed D&D core book back in the days when I was maybe 13 or something around the time. But it didn't really hook me up that badly. I did get into the D&D group like a year or two later when I already knew Bloodlines. But I do blame my brother. I have a decade older brother who was basically my source of culture when I was younger. And he's the kind of a brother that would not mind me sitting behind him playing Alone in the Dark when I was 4. And thanks to him, you know, I spent my childhood having nightmares about zombies, which was great. He gave me music, he gave me movies, he gave me video games. It was very hard back in the days to obtain these sources of culture in Poland. As much as it started to get easy, the later we went into the 90s, the piracy was still very blatant in Poland. Because before, in the 89, Poland freed itself from communism. And before that, we just didn't have the Western culture in Poland with that much of an access as it would normally be. And afterwards, it was just very expensive. So to get an original copy of the game or original music album, you were supposed to be like really rich, at least in my small town. I still remember I had a very rich, this one rich girl, she was very much a Regina George in my class. And she was the only person that got the original copy of The Sims. And we would just like, everyone wanted to be in her good graces just to copy that Sims CD. And later on, when she was getting the expansion packs, everyone was just like around the time when the expansion packs for The Sims released, everyone was nice to her. So that was interesting time. And yeah, my brother was studying back then. I was like 14, he was 24. And he would bring me a lot of the video games from his university. And Bloodlines was one of them. Of course, it was a pirated copy, just like some gray silver CD with Bloodlines written with a black marker on it. And he gave it to me when I was 14. He didn't really care much about the PEGI ratings or anything like that. He showed me Requiem for a Dream when I was like 13. So,
yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah. He was very like teaching me hardcore stuff when I was young. But I'm very thankful. Yeah. I'm very thankful. You know, he got me into many awesome movies and video games. And that's why I always loved listening to interviews with Tarantino. Because Tarantino was talking about his childhood being similar with his mom, just like showing him all the movies. And like my brother was this kind of a person for me. So it was awesome. And so he gave me Bloodlines. But the problem was it was in this very, back then for me, it was very slangy American English, which I had absolutely no idea about. I was taught UK English at school, no slang, very basic, you know, grammar and words. And when I was playing Bloodlines, I couldn't understand anything. So I got myself dictionaries. I think it was the time when I finally had internet at home, so I could Google or just use whatever search engine we used back then and just try to translate this game on my own, which was close to impossible when I was playing a Malkavian, so I quickly dropped that because I tried for my first playthrough, but then I changed the character and I finally could understand the game. So I thank Bloodlines for teaching me English when I was 14, and I got the straight A's from English at school because of it. And yeah, it was a very interesting time because I was going through a very rebellious phase at school. I was wearing all black and I was a little goth kid. So I still remember I was actually like, I had this military backpack on which I had the huge sign saying, "This sign does not exist." And the Tremere logo right below that. For some reason. I was a very edgy 14-year-old. But yeah, I feel like because I was bullied at school and I was one of these typical bullied goth kids, Bloodlines really helped me through that. And it kind of gave me some escapism, which I really needed back then, which later on followed with the role-playing sessions and role-playing group I found in the city nearby. And I was like walking through my small town in which I lived with Walkman and with like Hollywood theme that I ripped on some tape, I guess. And I was just like imagining myself being in LA and that I'm somewhere far away. And it was really poetic and very inspiring. And I guess it really helped me for the like this very dreadful teenager time, the phase where everything sucks and everyone sucks. And yeah. It's pretty cool.
It's really interesting to me how much your experience with Bloodlines mirrors my experience with the Vampire the Masquerade tabletop game. Because Bloodlines didn't come out until I was 19, I want to say. So I didn't really get to experience it as a young goth kid. But I did get into Vampire the Masquerade in ninth grade, which over here is like, you know, 14 years old. And like, seeing the illustrations in the books and the way we talked about our characters and everything just really influenced my fashion and influenced how I felt about the world. And then I got into goth music through things like the, you know, Vampire the Masquerade music from the Succubus Club CD and other like compilation CDs I would buy at Hot Topic. But yeah, like I used to walk around Raleigh, North Carolina doing the same thing, being like, I wish I was in New York. I wish I was in London. I wish I was somewhere cool. Like, I wish I was a cool vampire doing cool things.
But listen,
instead of a 15-year-old goth
you
kid.
Had Hot Topic. We didn't have Hot Topic. And like the moment I went to States for the first time and I entered Hot Topic when I was an adult, it was like 3 years ago. I was like, if I were 14 years old and I would see that in person, I would cry.
That was my first job, actually. I worked at Hot Topic when I was 16 years old. Like, it was my after school job.
That sounds like you would be my friend if I were 16 and lived nearby. Like, you are the cool girl working at Hot Topic. It's perfect.
Aww. I never felt cool. So thank you. Thank you for like retroactively validating my 16-year-old life choices.
I wouldn't have any such hope. I was not in on the least bit edgy or gothy or emo or anything like that. I was very, very prim, very proper, wore my blazer to school. My escapism before I discovered role-playing was Japan. That's where I wanted to go. Even from an anime sense, like a lot of boys, well, in fact, younger boys than me probably, anime and Pokemon and the like only really started coming in at a point I started losing interest in that kind of thing. But I was massively into Japanese movies, especially adult-rated ones, 18-rated ones over here in the UK. So movies like Battle Royale.
Yeah.
And
I was going to say, were you watching like Battle Royale and stuff? Suicide Club?
So cool.
Ichi the Killer?
Yeah, and because we have no media like that being made in the UK or indeed America, it was a window into another world, and a world that seemed exciting and different. And because in a lot of those Japanese movies, youth is rebellious but is kind of justified in its rebellion. Adults are almost always awful, corrupt individuals. In that cinema, it made me feel like, oh, okay, so there's actually a place where being an outsider is a good thing. And so, yeah, I was taken up by the idea of one day I'd go to Japan, and that would be my life. Those hopes were dashed when I needed to actually start working.
So you were never in Japan.
For what it's worth, I thought the same thing.
What's that, sorry?
So you were never in Japan.
No, I've never been. I did actually save enough money to go eventually. And then I got engaged to someone. One of my ex-fiancés. And that didn't work out, unfortunately. It resulted in a rather large drain appearing at the bottom of my bank account.
Okay,
I had also planned to go to Japan for a long time and never got to. So, like I said, I took Japanese for 5 freaking years. And I'm kind of the same where, like, I like Sailor Moon, but I'm not really, like, a big anime head.
Okay.
But I like Japanese culture and fashion and horror movies and things. And I just wanted to go for, like, a couple weeks at the minimum.
So I'm trying not to chuckle here because I do have a Japan story. But, but my stream watchers, the ones that watch me for a longer time, are going to make so much fun of me because I've been, like, telling this story, like, 3 or 4 times on streams already, and the same people coming over and over are like, no, not the Japan story again.
Well, I haven't heard the Japan story, so I am inviting you to tell it.
I mean, I think it's a pretty cool story, so I would love to share. So basically, when I was in high school was a super cool time. I had this extremely awesome class with like extremely rebellious people. We were known as troublemakers. We were just the worst. I mean, we were the kind of a intelligent but troublemaking troop, you know, like these kind of people from the high schools that are not like doing very bad when it comes to the education or exams and stuff like that, but they are always trouble and they're always doing some weird stuff. So there was this one guy in my class, and if he's listening to it, I gotta greet him. So the guy was like let's just say it, he was a weeb, right? But he was this very invested weeb. He learned Japanese on his own. He was very much interested in the whole culture of Japan. And he was, for the whole mm-hmm. school, he was saying that the moment he finishes high school, he's going to go on the road and he's going to hitchhike all the way from Poland to Japan. And he's going to stay there as long as his visa allows. And he's just going to do that. He had the whole route plan that he will hitchhike from Poland to Vladivostok in Russia.
Wow.
And then he's going to take a ferry and he's going to be in Japan and then he's going to hitchhike through it. So, of course, he was repeating this story.
Wow.
Yeah, he was repeating the story so much. We were making fun of him. And this was his Japan story. But the sucker made it. He actually did it. And he came back after this whole journey with a lot of stories. And he did exactly as he was telling for the whole high school. And a year after, he took a friend of his from my class who was one of the most timid, shy, quiet guys. I don't think he was ever abroad. And he took him to Japan and they hitchhiked through Japan together for a few months. And then they came back. And I was like, okay, if they can do that, I can do that too. Like, fuck this, I'm doing this. So, so the next year, I was kind of like waiting for some cheap flights to Japan because there are like some really cheap flights from Poland sometimes. And I found this, mm-hmm. These flights like both ways for like $300, I guess, or $400. And I called my friends, the one from the high school that I haven't talked to for like 2 years back then. And I told him, dude, I found this flight and I want to go, but I'm afraid to go alone. Would you go with me? And do you want to hitchhike from Japan together? And he was like, yeah, sure. So we went to Japan and we hitchhiked for like 3 weeks. And it was such a crazy journey because we went there with barely any money because I was a student. I didn't have any money. I just like paid everything I had for the airplane tickets. And we had the tents that we were sleeping in. And in Japan, it's like, it's not technically illegal to put the tent anywhere. So you can just like find any plot of grass and just put a tent there and sleep inside. And they are so nice that they're not going to get you out of there forcefully. They're going to very gently ask. So we had a lot of situations in which, for example, in the middle of the night, we were just putting the tent somewhere in the middle of Osaka because we were super tired. And we went to sleep. And in the morning, someone is knocking to our tent with the very quiet, sumimasen, sumimasen, which is like, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And we're opening the tent. And it's a security guy who very nicely asks us to move this beautiful, beautiful tent a little bit further away because we are sleeping right under the like dolphin aquarium in the middle of Osaka. And there's like a whole school trip around us and they want to watch the dolphins. So we did the same thing with like sleeping somewhere next to the Hilton Hotel, and the next day some like very important politicians of Japan were coming there and they very nicely asked us to move this tent because they didn't want the politicians to see it. And when we went out of a tent there was literally 20 security guards waving at us and smiling. So it was it was a very abstract trip, but it was lovely. I don't think I've ever done anything crazier in my life, but I'm very happy of the experience.
That's a wonderful story. I don't think I have really got any excuse now to not go to Japan other than COVID. That's yeah, a fairly good one.
Maybe don't go now.
In terms of international travel, I've traveled pretty decently and for whatever reason have just never revisited the idea of going to Japan, so maybe that's given me the inspiration. I've hitchhiked across America. I can hitchhike across Asia. To be honest, if anything, that is even more impressive to me that someone would hitchhike all the way across northern Russia, I assume, or via China to get to Vladivostok. Is I suppose there's the railroad.
There's a Trans-Siberian. There's a lot of stories about that one. There's a lot of drinking going on that train, apparently.
Yeah, the TSR, too, as it's otherwise known, which is a nice segue back into roleplay.
Yes.
I just going to say one thing, and that's that I have never in my life hitchhiked, and I can't imagine doing so, because growing up, it was always like, don't hitchhike, you're going to be murdered. Like, you are a very small woman, you should not ever do this, especially alone, do not hitchhike, you will die. And so it's so weird to me to hear people just be like, yeah, we just hitchhiked across countries, like, multiple times, it was great. And I'm like, how? How did you do that? Like, just, it was so, like, impressed upon me to never get into a car with a stranger as a kid.
I think it's
and
illegal.
So, like, it seems so weird to me.
In states as well, or yeah,
yes,
oh, I
yeah, it is in most places.
Because,
yeah, yeah, Matthew, you shouldn't be doing that again.
I mean, well, yeah, no one told me at the time, but I don't know. Maybe you'd agree with me, but it seems to we Europeans, it seems the hitchhike across Europe thing is something an awful lot of students do.
Yeah,
I've had American friends who have gone and done that, and I'm just like, I don't know that I could do it. It's just such, like, it's so deep in my brain that I'm going to get killed.
After I did it in America, I thought to myself, I would never do that again. This was stupid, a stupid thing to do. I've lost so much weight. I am exhausted. I feel like dying. But it was fun. It was an experience. It's the kind of thing to tell your grandkids.
So speaking of experiences, want to talk about some upcoming World of Darkness games?
That would make sense, wouldn't it?
since we have Martina on the podcast, maybe we should talk about some of the things she's been promoting.
I'm fine with talking about that while making segues to hitchhiking and Japan and everything. Because why not? This reminds me actually of The Night Road, one of the upcoming Vampire the Masquerade Choice of Games titles that I'm following very carefully, because Kyle Marquis, who's the author of that, he's sharing a lot of the development tidbits on the social media. And it seems to be like this really cool on-the-road vampire story. And I'm a sucker for on-the-road stories. Like, when I heard the premise of Vain Pursuit, which I played in, I was just all over the moon. Mostly because, like, Matthew, if you hitchhiked through states, that was my dream for a majority of my life. Because I am a sucker for beat generation literature, and On the Road was like my Bible when I was like 16.
Okay, if anybody wants to just come to the States, I will drive you across the country for a fee so that you don't have to hitchhike. Like, we can stay with my friends across the country. I've got friends in a lot of different places because I do conventions. We can make a road trip happen without putting people's lives in danger.
I mean, it's less exciting, but let's do that.
What? I'm awesome. You just said we'd be friends in high school. Come on.
When there's no murder involved, and, you know, where's the excitation?
I didn't say there'd be no murder involved. I just said that you would not get killed.
This is taking
okay.
I mean, I kind of thought y'all would both appreciate a dark turn, but you know.
Yeah, so coming very quickly to Night Road by Kyle Marquis, it's kind of funny because it's the I never thought that there was going to be a possibility out there for a interactive novel / video game about Vampire the Masquerade in which you can upgrade your car. Which is literally what Kyle Marquis has planned for Night Road. And a lot of other things too. Yeah, it's
I love that.
Pretty much of a really interesting concept for the story, the on-the-road story in the current times with the current Vampire the Masquerade, where it is not anymore safe to pass information online when you're a vampire because of the surveillance. So instead, they're going back to the old school methods of the couriers, but instead of sending messages, you know, for the horse carriages and, you know, in a Western kind of a way, you do it with a sports car and just driving state to state. So I think it's a pretty cool concept.
Yeah, it is. I'm a big fan, and it's something we're exploring a little in some of the upcoming V5 books that we're putting out, the idea of vampire outside of the city. Because while I think predominantly it is an urban game, and I doubt anyone would refute that, there's a lot of depths to be plumbed in rural horror, on-the-road horror, just horror in different environments beyond the sort of skyscrapers and rain-slicked streets of Chicago, New York, etc. Although, of course, lots of... fantastic games coming up set in those two places as well. We've got there's a board game set in Chicago, isn't there? Is it And you probably know better than I do.
Vampire the Masquerade Chapters, for example, is set in Montreal, actually. Yep. So that's one of the cities that we have in there. And there's I'm not really sure whether the settings of the other board games were already revealed. So I'm going to fret carefully around that, because I know for sure the city of one of them, but I'm not sure if it was actually mentioned yet by the devs. But yeah, I mean, city campaigns and city stories are just a very much of a core of what we know Vampire the Masquerade from. It's something that is very much a thing for Bloodlines, right? One and two, they are so ingrained mm-hmm. with their cities that the city became a character in these games. So that's something that is so important to the setting that when I heard about Vain Pursuit and that it was supposed to be on the road campaign, I was obviously super excited. But it turned out not to be so easy. In practice, it's actually super hard to be a vampire on the road. And I guess we have a lesson for the future. If we ever plan any chronicle or a story which is taking place on the road, it's going to be difficult.
Yeah. One of my favorite convention games to run is on a Greyhound bus going between cities in America that breaks down overnight. And so it's just your coterie and the other passengers on the bus, and you're waiting and waiting and waiting for a repair service to come along. And so it's a game where you're prone to a certain amount of introspection and desperate planning. how are you going to survive the dawn?
Yeah, I'm actually planning a chronicle myself for quite some time right now. I really wanted to write a one-shot which is based on vampires on a plane, which kind of sounds like Snakes on a Plane.
Yeah, but...
And I did watch Snakes on a Plane to get inspiration for this particular one-shot. And I've been watching a lot of these YouTube video documentaries about plane crashes and what can go wrong on a plane. And there's a whole lot of things that can go wrong, which is a bit of a scary thing to write a chronicle around when you are not an expert in aviation. But it's something that I would really want to do one day, just like put vampires on a plane and see what happens.
Well, enjoy your flight to Stockholm. I'm sure nothing will go wrong. So I know I'm asking you to play favorites here, but of the video games and let's expand it, video games and tabletop products that are coming out soon, mm-hmm. which are you looking forward to the most? Which really appeals to you as a player?
I mean, I can't really play favorites, so it's difficult, but I can tell you, like, from my personal heart, as a Vampire the Masquerade fan, obviously, when I joined the team, I was the most excited about Bloodlines 2. And that was, my whole mm-hmm. last year was spent on speculating on the game. So, like, all of my videos were just around any little reveals from Bloodlines 2. And, you know, like, every single thing they were revealing, I was just trying to break it down into pieces because I was so excited about it. I feel like the events which they have done that I participated in when they revealed Bloodlines 2, the event which, by the way, recently got some awards because of how well it was organized, was really great for keeping up the hype and for making me even more hyped for it. That was in March last year. And that was a tender reveal event. So basically the tender RG campaign evolved into, mm-hmm. hey, it's actually Bloodlines 2. And that was a very big moment for me. So I was waiting for Bloodlines 2. And then after I joined the team, of course, I had a lot of questions in the recruitment. Do you understand you won't be able to make more speculation videos? I'm like, yeah, sure. I'm going to know things now. So after I joined, one of my... I'm not really sure if I can say bosses because it doesn't really work like that. But the head of communications in Paradox, Loic, a really great guy, he was like super worried that the moment I get Bloodlines in my hands, I'm just going to get out of there and just play the game and then leave. And after I stood and I was like, no, this job is great and I really love everyone and it's awesome. He was like, just like relief all over his face and voice. It was really funny. But after I of course want to check out other products that we have in production and other things that we are working on. There are so many things I'm excited for, even in the equal matters now than Bloodlines 2. There's a lot of really awesome stuff coming. One of the things that I'm personally super much into that didn't get a lot of the fraction in the news just yet, it's going to have more reveals this month, is the new Werewolf game called Werewolf the Apocalypse, Heart of the Forest. And this is the game made by Polish developers. So it's yet another game after Cutters of New York, developed by my countrymates, but it's a different studio. And developers, writers for this game did work on Witcher 1 before, which is a game that I personally really love. I love the first Witcher. And I was able to play some of that game. I cannot reveal much yet because they are going to reveal stuff this month. But I love the writing on it. It's really good. And I'm really waiting for that one to come out and for people to see it, because I feel like it's something to keep an eye on.
That's fantastic. Thank you very much for that. I can say, I know a lot of people who listen to this are going to have been keeping up with all of the various World of Darkness announcements. No doubt watched the trailer and gameplay footage for Earthblood.
Yes.
Which came out, well, as of time of recording, I guess, last week. And thereabouts. Also the trailer for Swansong.
Yes.
I have to say, I watched the trailers for Swansong and Earthblood back to back, and that was such a jarring tonal experience that I don't recommend it. Like, I think you should wait 5 minutes between the two, because I watched Swansong and, like, having, you know, like, I'm familiar with the council. Like, I am excited about this, like, narrative RPG. Also, I used to live in Connecticut, so the idea that it's set in the, like, Boston-Hartford area is very cool to me. Because I'm so familiar with that area. It's the same feeling I had when I was playing Fallout 4. Because I was like, oh, hey, I used to live here, you know? So that's part of why I'm excited for Bloodlines 2, actually, is because I lived in Seattle for a couple years, and I always said that if I could do a by night book, like if I could do one from scratch, it would be Seattle by Night. So I'm like, this is even better. I get to just experience Seattle by Night. Swansong trailer, amazing. Earthblood trailer, amazing. If you watch them back to back, you're like, oh, cool narrative, dark, creepy stuff. I'm in this like cool, mysterious mood now. And all of a sudden it's like metal music, werewolf, fuck shit up. And I'm like, oh God. Like, both look amazing, but it's like listening to a symphony and then listening to Rammstein. Like, it doesn't make sense in your ears.
I get such a earworm after we got the trailer for the gameplay trailer for Werewolf to review and just to check out before the event. And I had no idea what the song is, but it was such an earworm. I kept on, you know, hearing it in my head up until the event itself, when I finally asked the community person on Discord, what the hell is this song? And I learned that apparently, like, this is such a cool band. I had no idea about their existence before. They're called Alien Weaponry, and it's a band which is from New Zealand, and all of the members have Maori ancestors, and they are actually singing in Maori. And it's just like the video clip for this particular song that is featured in the trailer is just, you know, Maori people like screaming and fighting, and it's wonderful. I absolutely love it.
I love getting insights like that. Thank you very much for that. So we're coming down to the end of our interview time. So Dixie, are there any other questions you would like to ask our guest?
Well, I wouldn't mind touching actually a little bit on Wraith the Oblivion Afterlife, if we can talk about that for a second, just because I think that is the thing that might convince my boyfriend to get a VR headset, like of all things, because we are big Wraith fans in this house. And that is not what I ever would have thought of for a video game, but I think for a VR game, it's perfect.
I think it works so well. Of course, I cannot tell you much more than what was revealed so far, but
of course,
was actually revealed because the developers are very much talkative and they are super cool when it comes to interviews. They share a lot of info and insights about the game. It's really a project that, when you like think about World of Darkness VR game from the get-go, it doesn't really click in your mind very quickly, but once you add Rafe to it, it suddenly makes so much sense. And I feel like it was just a like a very good partnership that happened in between World of Darkness and that particular company. They're both Swedish, Paradox Interactive and Fast Travel Games. So I just talked yesterday with the guy from Fast Travel Studios who told me that once I move to Sweden, I'm welcome to join them in the office for a coffee and a little bit of a scare. So I'm waiting for that. Yes.
Ooh, fun.
It's, of course, supposed to be a very, very scary game, and they are aiming for that kind of a alien isolation slash amnesia vibe, which... Yes.
See, that's also awesome, because we love those games in this house. Like, we are... Like, we love horror games in general. So, that'll be interesting, having to clear out a space for the VR.
It's one of my favorite games in general. I feel like it's so good. I love Alien franchise in general. So, Alien Isolation for me was just a fun service. And when they told me that they want to base the scariness of the game on that and less of a jump scare kind of a thing, because I hate jump scares in VR. I think that will be really not fun. But they want to do more of this...
Yeah, I'd probably fall over.
More of the psychological horror, like Sandfield did, for example. And that's something that scares me the most and something that I love personally. I love the fact that they are also the dedicated VR developer, because when you develop games both for PC and VR at the same time, it usually poses a lot of problems when it comes to accessibility on VR itself. The games which have movement programmed that works on PC or consoles usually don't work as well in VR and vice versa. So it's kind of a difficult... I know that because I did work in the studio which did a lot of the VR games as well. It was called The House of Fables. And when we were working on the VR games, it was always the problem of what to do not to make people nauseous, what to do to prevent the motion sickness. Fast Travel Games have this nailed. They did it very well with their previous game. So we really hope that this game is also going to be accessible for people that are not into VR just yet and want to get into VR because of Rafe, which is, I think, a lot of people. We'll have a very smooth first experience. And I think that's going to be, it's in the good hands. So I really hope for the best results in there. Yeah.
That's so exciting. Okay, yeah, that was the main thing that I want to talk about that we hadn't talked about yet, just because, like I said, I didn't expect anything to really happen with Wraith of the Oblivion this quickly, of all the properties, you know? It's just one of those things, because it was never one of the kind of big three of the World of Darkness games, and then even the big four, like, I would, like, often Changeling was kind of up there above them. Like, I played Hunter before I played, you know, Wraith. Of the original, like, World of Darkness properties. So, like, it's just not one I would have anticipated. And hearing that it's going to be, like, a creepy psychological horror VR game makes me so, so, so happy. And I cannot wait to try it. I definitely think that our household will be investing in a VR headset for that game.
I will be too. It'll be a good experience for my son. I imagine by the time it comes out, he'll be about 5 years old, so...
no!
You should just make sure that he watches Alien first so he understands what he's in for. You know? That's a good movie for a five-year-old. I mean, if Requiem for a Dream is for 13-year-olds, then we can assume that, you know, Alien is for five and up, right?
A decent gap, you know. But
you sound like my brother.
thinking about it, I did do a Let's Play of Amnesia Dark Descent many years ago, which was mostly me going, oh, fuck, oh, shit, oh, God, oh, fuck. as I was desperately or very creepily trying to open up doors without signaling creatures on the other sides of them. So maybe I'll just get him to watch that on mute.
Great idea.
So with that said... Thank you very, very much for coming onto the Pathcast with us, Martina. It has been a great pleasure.
Thank you so much for inviting
me. Yes, thank you.
The time went on so quickly, I'm sure it just lasted 15 minutes, right?
Yeah. And we'll invite you on again in a couple of weeks. It'll be fine. We'll talk about other childhood anecdotes that bear no relation
Childhood Traumas, the podcast.
Play. Yeah.
Let's do it.
Well, thank you very much. We will now return to Eddie. We're back from outer space.
So I should let Eddie out.
Nah. Okay. I'm looking forward to him giving his social media contact details from within the shame cupboard.
I'm going to let Eddie out because I'm nice.
All right.
You didn't put any holes in the cupboard.
I know.
Wow, you've been holding your breath for like an hour. That's some good breath control there.
I really have a lot of practice with that.
Yeah, he's like a sort of James Bond of the RPG scene.
Except none of that.
No, I'm fairly certain there's one of the movies where Bond has to stay underwater for an inordinately long time. Inhumanly long time.
That said, I was actually a minor character in a novel about someone being assassinated at Gen Con.
Oh.
What? Okay.
Yes, Matt Forbeck did a 3-book series about someone who got killed at Gen Con, and so the main character does an investigation and talks to a lot of different people in the RPG industry, and me and Rich Thomas are two of the people in that novel.
Huh! Yeah. I didn't know that.
Two huzz. Simultaneous huzz.
So Eddie.
Yes.
I called out during the interview that the fact that I thought you would enjoy the most was where her name came from, which is, of course, that Outstar Walker is a bastardization of Homestar Runner. Because nice. Out and home are opposite in Walker Runner.
That's amazing. And,
yeah. Was that, in fact, your favorite fact?
Yeah, it was, in fact, my favorite fact, yes.
Okay, and good, good.
And there were a lot of facts in that episode. But to be honest, I'm surprised that given the bevy of facts that were presented, that is your favorite one. But I respect your decision, Eddie.
I stand by it having exactly as much context as you think I would have in this situation.
Exactly. Well, it's difficult to hear a one-hour-long interview
when you're stuck in a cupboard with no air.
Exactly. Because air, as we know, helps sound travel. So, what do we want to discuss anything before we sign off? Oh, I know what will be a good idea before we start going into anything else. Dixie, you quite rightly called me out after we terminated the interview that I was so rude as to not ask for Martina's social media information.
Oh, no.
Yeah, if anybody wants to follow Martina, she is at Outstar Walker on Twitter. Her YouTube is Outstar Walker, and then of course you can find her on the official World of Darkness Twitch channel in addition to her own.
That's quite correct, yeah. And I've been an interviewee on that channel. That was a lot of fun.
And was she nicer to you than you were to her?
I'd say there's a sort of friendly rivalry going on. Rivalry in that she is significantly better than I could ever be at this kind of job, and so I'm bitter.
I see.
Which is funny, because she talks all the time about, you know, how, like, even in this interview about how your videos got her into some of this stuff and gave her all this inspiration, and you're kind of right. a little, like a bit of a mentor to her, and now you're like, no, I'm jealous, and I don't like her.
Stamp you back
down. You've surpassed me. Well, I mean, you are adventurous, so that makes sense.
Up jumped fledgling. But no, I understand she's going to be publicizing this podcast all over. Oh, sorry, we just had some kind of sound decompartmentalizationism.
What? We did?
Yeah, because it seemed like you started talking about 4 seconds after I had started talking. But in fact, I think you started talking about the same time that I did. It's only your audio came through to me 4 seconds into my speaking.
That's weird. I didn't get that at all. So that's all you, Matthew.
Okay.
You went backwards into the past and heard us later.
Oh, don't let me stay in this era for much longer. I don't want to go backwards.
You got 4 more seconds of pandemic than everybody else. Congratulations.
And see, I was just thinking the other day about how nice it would be if we could just go back to 2016 with all the knowledge that we have now and have a do-over of the past 4 years. I mean, I wouldn't like to give up this job for a couple of years, which is what I would have to do if we did that. But, like, I also, you know, wouldn't mind a redo of my early 30s.
Seriously.
Well, as we look nostalgically into the past that never was, Eddie, if people want to find you on social media, where would they go?
Besides finding me mourning four lost years of productivity, you will find me at pugsteady.com or pugsteady on most social media.
You can find me at Dixie Cyanide on most social media or dixiecochran.com.
They can find me on Twitter as ClackClickBang. They can find me on MatthewDawkins.com. And excitingly, coming up this next week on Tuesday, you will see They Came From Beyond the Grave. Woo-hoo. On the 21st of July. That Kickstarter will be starting. And next week's episode will be all about They Came From Beyond the Grave and various other horror movie-related subjects. So, woo indeed. Woo! Woo! The ghost of Ric Flair. The most obnoxious ghost. No, he's not dead yet. But when he is, you know he will just be saying woo, woo repeatedly, and the other ghost will be saying no, it's
ooh.
I'm a tempest flying son of a gun. Woo!
What if Ric Flair has just been talking to ghosts this whole time?
He speaks the language.
Yeah, he just speaks ghost.
On that happy note, many worlds, one path.